You're listening to Bison Report Radio, presented by 24/7 Sports.
You guys have done a great job for Bison Nation throughout the years here. Great to be on with you.
Last time you had me on, I told you guys were the best in the business, and I really mean that. Your coverage of Bison basketball is always top-notch, and the players, the coaches, the fans, we all appreciate it.
I mean, I think you and your staff now have done an amazing job with the Bison Report. Again, I think it gives NDSU fans an outlet to go to for good football coverage, elite basketball coverage, and everything recruiting.
You know, I really appreciate you guys, Bison Report, for what you guys do for Bison football.
Here's your host and publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uglow.
What is up, Bison fans, and welcome to another Victory Monday edition of the Bison Report Radio podcast, brought to you by Gateway Chevrolet. Quinn, win the game, play the song.
Love it.
As you can tell by his unbridled enthusiasm, Quinn Ollo is stepping in here for the threes. We do what we can to get you the recap by Monday afternoon. Otherwise, the previous week's game is kind of old news.
Yeah, for sure. Glad to be here, and I'll try to do my best to fill those big shoes of Jackson and Trev.
In the news, not a ton of news, but we can still hit you with a breaking news sounder. Guess what? No MBFC players of the week. Although Cody might win Lyman. That doesn't come out for a while, but once again.
Yeah, I mean, I think it
would have been
before,
okay. It would have been harder to make a case for someone this week.
Sure. I guess you can't just use the eye test for these. No. You have to put up stats, which Hunter has done the first three weeks. But even this week, I mean, that catch to start the game, but
Toe Drake swing?
Oh. He leagued it 2 feet in.
Dude, Cam was really good. And that was something that I more appreciated on the rewatch. Like the one to Brosio that didn't count, and the one that Raja dropping it would be aggressive. Because calling it a drop would be aggressive, but that ball placement, that guy's 5'7".
Yeah, I mean, I think as long as Cam always puts the ball where, and he showed, I think this game he did a really good job. Like, he only put the ball where our guys could get it.
Yeah.
And as long as he keeps doing that, I mean, not that that's a problem of his, but as long as he does that every game, he's going to be fine.
Wisconsin fired their coach during a Packer game. We were talking about this off the air.
Did Coach show up on that list too?
I don't know. Just an all-time finesse move by the athletic department at Wisconsin. I don't know what the NDSU equivalent of that would be. Like firing Coach Entz during Rib Fest? I don't know. I don't know. Like, when would you not have people's attention? I don't know. But to fire Wisconsin's head football coach during a Packer game is an all-time finesse move to get people to not really even understand that it happened.
Yeah, and then the Packer game, the way that it went, I mean, they still won, which is good, but as, Pat's on their third string quarterback.
Right.
Game going to overtime.
It was stressful.
Like, even if when they did find out, they were probably just like, yeah, well, the Pack barely beat the Patriots, so.
As far as, NDSU, I don't think Ants is probably on that list for Wisconsin, but you start talking about, the ripple effect. Like, they had such success at KU with Leopold, and he literally has former Bison on his staff. Like, Scotty Fuchs is on his staff. Does KU go really good mid-major coach to succeed Leopold if he takes the Wisconsin job, which I have actually heard is likely, I'm not breaking news, I'm spraining news. It's his dream job. And then I'm not just...
Oh, KU's head coach?
KU's head coach's dream job is Wisconsin.
Oh, nice.
And he's going to be... I mean, he was unbelievable at Whitewater forever.
Oh, yeah, I forget about that.
So, but not just that. Like, I've heard from a guy who would know that he feels like Leopold would be the next guy at Wisconsin, and then that is literally his dream job, and that KU is in a tough spot right now.
Yeah, I mean, I would feel so bad for Kansas.
I would not, but that's another issue.
Well, obviously, yeah. But I'm just saying, like, when you're that bad for that long, obviously they brought in, who was the LSU guy?
Les Miles. Yep.
And, like, even, like, me being an outsider, and I was younger when that happened, I'm like, oh, well, maybe they'll be a little bit better now. And
sure.
Oh, my dude was eating grass and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. So my concern, if you're, and obviously, like, I wish nothing but the best for Coach Ince and his family forever. But, like, if your concern as a Bison fan is, I don't want Coach to leave, I would not necessarily be worried about the Wisconsin job. I would be maybe worried about the ripple effects of the Wisconsin job, the Arizona State job, and potentially the Colorado job, and, like, the openings that those coaches leave.
Yeah, and
if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I don't think, yeah, like you said, it's going to be a ripple effect, but I don't know if he would, like, leave to go somewhere that lost a coach that went to a good team, then he's, like, going to a place that has to be rebuilt.
Sure.
Because, like, Coach Kleiman, I don't think, I didn't know that much about Kansas State, but no, I don't think they were a rebuilding program.
No, coach was Bills, last, so year, Bills that, last year, they were 6-6 bowl team, which right. is not a train wreck.
No.
So.
I don't know if you want to go. And, like, you weren't insinuating this, but, like, I don't know if Coach Ince would want to go to some place like Kansas where they were, you know, they're historically a bad program that had one good year.
But maybe they don't need to be rebuilt. Maybe you... Yeah,
true.
But, I mean, half the roster could be in the portal, too. You don't know.
Yeah.
You don't know. Anyway, enough absolutely rampant speculation.
With fantasy booking.
Yeah, fantasy booking indeed. Absolutely no basis in reality. We're just talking. Kobe Johnson, day-to-day, the vibe that I got from that was that it's not really considered serious. The vibe that I got from the Kava stuff is not great.
Yeah, and it's tough because, obviously, Kava's a veteran D lineman at this point, six-year guy, and the D-tack room's already hit hard. They were young coming into the year, then Eli gets hurt, and now they're, you know, I think Dutenheffer, Heisman, made sure to get his name right. Do not want to disrespect him. He's a redshirt freshman playing.
Sure.
He's going to be a ball player. Last name Heisman, awesome.
Yeah.
And I think you posted that clip of that stunt that him and Spence did.
Yes.
See, that, I think, if my memory serves me correctly, that's been in the playbook, I mean, forever. But typically, we, like, D-end and D-tackle stunts on runs just aren't a thing. Because sometimes, you know, the risk reward on it's pretty high.
Right.
But
you can stunt right out of the play.
Right. But I think that's something that they're going to do at least for the next few weeks while they get these guys more and more comfortable with their techniques, with their, you know, with their playing ability. Cause you got to remember that Dutenheffer and Heisman, they're second year guys.
Yeah.
I mean, that's something that Coach Gazer is
19-year-old kids, 19 right. and a half, 20.
Right. And I know they're studs. I mean, they're playing at 19, but I think, you know, practice, we'll talk about it later, but something that Goose is probably still, I mean, he did it with guys like Tangway and GM and Steidel in their fifth year, that it was always about technique.
Yeah.
So, I mean, now more than ever, until those guys get more and more comfortable with just the basic technique of things, I think they're going to have to throw in some of those stunts early on just to, you know, open up guys like Spence to make plays.
So awesome to watch Christian Watson score his first NFL touchdown. I'm so happy that it was at home.
I think I put in the chat, was that the easiest looking leap of all time?
Not only the easiest looking leap, but I don't know, like, I absolutely would not have been down in flag football. I mean.
Right. I was talking to Ross Kenley.
Just gliding past people.
Right. I was talking to Ross Kenley. He was like a lifelong Packer fan. I said, even without that block that Dobbs had, no one's touching him.
No, I don't think Jack would have made it. I don't think Jack Jones would have made it.
The block was great, but I don't think it mattered. They were just totally outnumbered.
This is such a tangent. He and Romeo are going to be so sick, man.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's very, very narrow casting to the Packers fans that are listening to this podcast. I appreciate all four of you.
Oh, one last Pro Bison since we talked about your team.
Okay.
Tuska on the Chargers as of last week.
I know.
Oh,
that was the radio show, not the podcast. We did cover it. We did cover it. Well, you and I addressed it on the radio show, and we did address it on the on the pod. Did he do anything?
I think he was on some specials.
Okay.
He was on the Twitter video afterwards and looked sick.
I bet he did. Easy to look sick in the powder blue and yellow.
Yes.
Bison Report Radio podcast is brought to you in part by Gateway Chevrolet. go and see my good buddy John Cole. My first job out of college was slinging Chevy pickups for Gateway Chevrolet, the good people over there, Brad Sather, my excellent service guy, Mike Levingston, and Dan Dardis, and a bunch of other folks over there do a great job if you have any service needs. But if you're in the you know, market for a vehicle, what has impressed me lately about Gateway Chevrolet is just inventory. New inventory every day. Obviously, used inventory that comes in when people trade in for that new inventory. A lot of lots, even still. I mean, you talk about supply chain, talk about the pandemic, et cetera, et cetera. There's a lot of car lots that are half full, three quarters full. Gateway's got a ton of cars, ton of options. The business finance people over there are excellent as well. And they just do a tremendous job, and we appreciate them so much for being the presenting sponsor of this podcast. So shout to Gateway Chevrolet, I-29 Frontage Road in Fargo, Gateway Clearance Center on University Drive, or right there at gatewayfargo.com. Let's talk about the press conference. I was otherwise occupied and unable to be there, but some interesting sounders from that press conference, and I want to play Matt's discussion about this defensive end room potentially without Kaba.
Well, I think you got to see Cole Menz has to play more for us. I anticipate maybe true freshman Kelton McCaslin, you know, taking some reps at practice and starting that preparation process. You guys have seen, there's always seems like there's a freshman every year that steps up in the defensive line room.
All right. So we talked about, I think it was JB and I broke down the defense and kind of what we could see happen there as far as somebody playing early. And I mentioned that the corner room was pretty well stocked, but occasionally folks do make an impact at pass rusher. Now, Logan Larson already getting work inside, but pass rusher is a place where they have been able to work in the occasional true freshman. And McCaslin's interesting. 6'5", 222, two-star kid for St. Charles East High School in the kind of the Chicagoland area. I know they're recruiting his little brother as well. He was a big deal. He was a big get. And it's always interesting because, like, no shade being thrown here, I promise. No shade. Barty was listed at 6'5 in high school.
Right.
How tall is Barty?
I don't even remember. Sorry.
Okay. But, like, is he taller than you or shorter than you?
Oh, taller.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. All right.
But I don't know if he's 6'5".
He's
but
not,
I get what you're saying.
I can promise he's not 6'5". In fact,
this is Peralt doing, like, a good on the guys, giving them an inch or two.
But I'm telling you that he was 6'5", advertised to us by his high school.
Oh, got it.
So, Barty, just an example, again, we are throwing zero shade here. This is just an example. Barty was last year, from a height perspective, listed at 6'3".
That's funny, yeah.
And that happens.
Right.
It does. McCaslin on 24/7 Sports and by his high school was listed at 6'5", 220. What is he at NDSU? 6'5", 222. So this is a real, actual, long, rangy end that they are obviously trying to pack weight on, I'm sure. But
yeah, and like, yeah,
he's this is a guy with some size.
Right. He's been in Devo lifts for probably, 6 weeks now since fall camp's been over, 5. So he's probably creeping up to 230 if he's not there by now.
Sure.
And 6'5", 230, you can hold your own. I mean, you're at that point. But it, yeah, it
or just take pass rush snaps away from somebody who's
right. And like Coach Jen said, I think he said Menz. It was Ben.
Yeah,
I think he had snaps on Saturday. And his bot, I think they have him listed like 6'3", so he's probably more of, you know, McCormick's body type,
right,
and player.
Yeah, and the hope is that McCaslin can be like Tusker or Wagey, obviously.
Sure.
In the
we all hope he can be like Tusker
or
Wagey.
But I mean, if we're just talking body types,
yes,
you're comparing Menz to a McCormick. And if it's a legit 6'5", 222 as a true freshman, then I'm going to throw out Tuska and Wagey as the hope.
Yes.
I'm not putting those expectations on the young man. I'm just saying, like, the body, the type of player he could be, the tools are there. The length is truly there.
Yeah, and I keep forgetting that.
And look, man, like, I don't mean to cut you off, but guess what? NDSU has had some sweet short-ish defensive ends. Kyle Emanuel was not particularly tall. Greg Menard was not particularly tall. They've had some sweet dudes rushing the passer that have not been enormous.
Yeah, and TP is a great pass rusher.
Tony Pierce,
yeah.
Absolutely.
No, and I keep forgetting that the DN room and the D-tack room are the same room now.
Yes, they are. Goose.
And
Javi and I talked about that on BRTV.
Yeah, and it's funny because, like, I think of, like, what that would have been like when I was a D-tackle, and I don't even know if we would have made it out of the room without, like, an all-out brawl at some points with some of those guys. But I bet Coach Goose just loves it because he can, as young as that D-tack room is, not they're their own room, but as far as young as the D-tacks are, he probably loves that he has vet guys in there still, which I didn't even think about earlier. Like, when me and Willis were talking about stuff like that, D-tack and DN room, well, they're the same room now. So as far as, like, having, like, younger D-tacks, it probably doesn't mean as much as it did when you have guys in the room. TP, Cava, you know, older guys, older established guys that are, you know, helping those D-tacks out. But, it definitely hurts that Cava might be out for a while. I have no idea, but let's just say, you know.
Yeah, we don't know anything. It's just a lot of times when guys are out for a long time, Ansel will be like, yeah, I haven't talked to Bobby or Mason yet, which I don't know how much truth there is in that. Yeah. It doesn't really matter. It's just the guys that are out for a long time, Matt will just say he doesn't have the information.
Right. But, no, I think we're going to see. I mean, someone's got to step up. It's the case. You hear it every press conference that NDSU has had, that, you know, NFL teams have.
Next man up.
It's next man up, and it's true. And you see it now with the D-tacks, with Heisman, the last few games after Eli was out playing more and more. And you're going to see it, you know, this week. I mean, there's going to be someone out there that you probably haven't seen before, haven't seen a lot of.
Yeah. So. All right, we got one more on tackling.
I thought we improved tackling. Now, I say that, and so let's make sure that we understand when I say better doesn't mean good. It just was better, okay? And so do I think there was something? I mean, the longest run of the day was a missed tackle on that third down where they caught us in a run play on third and 12 or whatever, and he popped it for 44. We had two guys at the point of attack and both knocked each other off. Overall, I think there was fewer missed tackles. I do think there's some areas that we can continue to work on. But I saw some things, some of the things that we'd been stressing happening in game day. And so we're going to continue to stress those things and make it a priority for us.
Think the guys are doing another tackling circuit today?
I got to give the man credit because he is so much more media savvy than the day that he took that job. I'm going to take a lot of that credit. But honestly, like, him not so subtly calling out Kubitz and Wirtz was jarring. I mean, how, like, to the point he was about that. And this is also to the point.
That was hilarious. I was not expecting, like, yeah, that popped me pretty hard when I heard him say, now, just because I said it was better doesn't mean it's good.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
I kind of got JB's take on this, but I want yours. How do you rep tackling when, as I've mentioned, like, you kind of don't probably want Nick Kubitz drilling himself into young Tamarik Williams six times in a practice? Like, how, without going good on good, how do you rep the needed tackling?
Yeah, and I listened to you guys on Friday, and I was thinking back. I don't think, even my freshman year, I think time had already kind of, you know, I think we were already in that new generation of not tackling or even, like, thudding up that much during the season. We thudded it up a ton during, you know, fall camp in 2016, like, when I was a freshman, like, I remember that. But by the time I was on scout, you know, it's a little different because I was on a scout team defense, but, I mean, obviously we weren't really thudding up the running backs as scout team guys, but I don't know if there's a ton of thudding up. I mean, I know there's a ton of thudding up on, you know, the defense going against the scout team O, but I don't think there's any sort of tackling.
Shout out to the scout team offense, kids.
Yeah, those guys definitely get thudded up still today. I mean, There's no way they don't. I mean, Tuesdays and Wednesdays, it's all about Thud. It still is. I mean, that's something that won't change. But, yeah, I was trying to think back. It's, you know, it's tackling circuit, which is always, you know, during the, like, the first couple periods of practice. But other than that, I imagine Coach Entz is telling Gazer, Gio, you know, all the defensive guys, just preaching it during meetings. Make it a point of emphasis, like, during the meetings, too. Like, make it a point, like, where it bothers guys.
Sure.
And I'm sure that's probably what happened. Like, I imagine when he says that, you know, the players talked a lot during the halftime of the USD when they had however many missed in the first half. Make it a player-led thing. Make it a, you know, do you want enough? Because as much as, like, people may not want to hear it, I mean, you got as – tackling is the most important thing on defense because, you know, obviously. But as, you have to – I'm trying to find the words here. There are other important things you have to work on during practice as far as scheme, you know, knowing where guys are going to be on the offensive side. So you can't focus the entire practice every day on a, like, tackling circuit. At the end of the day, it does just have to be a want thing.
All right. Fair. Folks, if you are doing business, you know, you go to an insurance company and the one product that they sell is the same logo that's on the door. It's the logo that's on their commercial on football Sundays. It's the same company that's on their radio ads, and it's just the one thing. You're taking a gamble, and the gamble is that that agent that sells for that one company is providing the best possible product for you and your family. And honestly, the odds are against you because of the multitude of options that there are in this area, where that is not a problem. And plus, you know, you do that, and you end up visiting 5, 6, 7, 8 of those guys looking for the best price if you're going to price shop on your own. Don't do that. Go with an independent insurance agent, and go with my guy, Quinn, obviously him who's on the podcast right now, at Tundra Insurance in Horace. Horace is a booming community. We're so excited to be a part of it. And we're right on the main drag, just one building south of Big Irv's at 416 Main. Check us out at tundrainsurance.com or give Quinn a call at 701-969-1661. Let him do the shopping for you. Let him work with the 20 carriers that he has available to him to find the exact thing that you, your family, your business, whatever, find that coverage that you need for that price that you want to pay. The one thing, so I had a chance to go back and just rewatch the TV copy and pair that a little bit with the PFF college grades. And big shocker, the highest graded Bison offensive player was Cody. But the number two ranked Bison player from Sunday or from Saturday was Cam. And I read that and I wanted to kind of reconcile that. And then, you remember that PFF and frankly, all grading really should just be on, like, your individual decision-making, your individual play. And where he himself truly, and I've used this joke with him before, he was Vince Vaughn in the Wedding Crashers. He was first-team All-State. He was going to make it rain. He'll put the ball anywhere he wants it. He was literally putting – the one to Lipke was an absolute dot. The one that Lippy almost – like Spider-Man caught on the sideline.
I want, how high was Lippy in the air?
That was wild.
Like, did he find the bouncy part of the field?
I don't know. That was just wild.
Not to discredit him. I mean, I sound like Lippy's like a lunch pail, blah, blah, blah. But, like,
right.
I don't even know if it's humanly possible to jump as high as he was in the air.
That was wild. But the drop in the bucket to Brosio that got called back because Cody murdered someone. The throw to Raja that probably should have been caught was a far hash just dot. Obviously, the throw to Lipke was incredible. Even the 3rd and 16 that he picked up to Mathis was a far hash just BB. I mean, just right where it needed to be. Cam was really, really good. Then I think, you know, kind of a galvanizing moment for that team, too, is gets absolutely drilled, helmet pops off, loses his headband, and just trots off the field like nothing happened. That cannot have felt good. As someone who has very limited football experience, even I know that when the chin strap rakes up across the face and the nose and the eyes, it's not great.
Yeah, I'm hoping that you know how fancy chin straps are now, or that you can just like they're not even buckles. They're like they slide in and out.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm hoping he just forgot to like slide it all the way up so that it was like a smooth takeoff with the helmet. But yeah, I'm sure it didn't feel good. And I tried to look close. Hopefully he didn't like. I mean, obviously we probably would have known, but I don't think he hit his head on the ground or anything. So
yeah,
it was probably as clean as like a bad helmet knockoff could have been. But yeah, I think Cam too. But like this is the most, I mean, all around offense, defense. I think this is the most confident team NDSU that we've seen this year.
You thought this was their most complete game?
Complete. I mean, there were some. This is the fastest they've played.
Sure.
JB talked about that. Like, if you're gonna make a mistake,
make it fast. Sure.
I think the mistakes they made, they all made them fast. I think, in my opinion, I think this was the most confident that we've seen them so far. Which hopefully they can just build off of. I mean, yeah, game four or game, this was game five, whatever it was.
Yep, but game five.
So yeah, we're five games into the year going into game six. I think it's a good sign. I mean, it's what you want to see at this point. You don't want to see them take a step back. So hopefully that South Dakota halftime, hopefully that can be a moment we look back on this year.
Sure. And, you know, talking about the game's kind of script, the game flow. I thought it was really impressive to be, you know, well over 200 yards rushing against the number two rush D in the Valley. And Entz made mention that I think they had 4.9 a carry. I just thought that they blocked well. And I know, look, I know that we talked all week about how hard it was to gauge because they had played two cupcakes and one top 10 team in the FBS. So how do you gauge? And obviously it was a team that they had run all over in Youngstown a year ago, but I was impressed. I thought they had some physical linebackers. I thought the defensive linemen, the transfer kids were reasonable, but I thought they played well up front. I thought the offensive line played well.
Yeah, I think they played really well. Great did a really good job coming in. Terrible penalty calling him. That was not a blindside.
Yeah, you did not like that.
No, still don't. But yeah, I mean, I think it's like any year, they're going to lean on those guys, especially with a group that like, not old, but especially with a group that old, you have multiple. I mean, I think everyone in there besides Gray had been starting for more than a year, except Gray and Mason now, but yeah, just a lot of experience. And Gray and Mason, they were true freshmen when they had to step up and play during that 2021 spring season.
Yeah. They're not rookies.
No, they're not rookies. They're not even first time starters at this point. So yeah, I call them multiple year starters. They've started multiple years, but yeah, they're going to lean on them. Not that they have to, because obviously Cam's really good, but it's just what NDSU has done. And then T-Roll was on some sicko stuff.
Yes, he was.
But
I thought this was in the conversation for Jalen Sundell's best game as a Bison. In the conversation.
Yeah, and like I said, I think Jalen would say hopefully every game is that for him.
Sure. They got to tackle better. 14 more missed tackles. I think Kayser led the way with three. We mentioned early on in the week, you know, this is a program that has been right between 8 and 9 missed tackles per game, and they're at 14.6. This 14 will probably bring that down to 14.4 or 14.3, whatever. But I just don't think you can win a national championship missing 14 tackles per game. I think it has to get better.
Yeah, and it's gonna at some point. There's gonna be a game. I mean, Arizona was a game where we couldn't get the quarterback down, or you know, some of those plays over the middle where we couldn't get the receiver down as soon as they caught the ball. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be an emphasis during practice, whether it's, you know, the tackle circuit at the beginning, at the end, maybe they do it twice. Pray for the boys if they do it twice, because the tackle circuit is not fun, but it's not supposed to be fun. It's what they bring out when tackling is bad. And right now, like Coach Entz says, it's getting better, but it is still not good.
McLaughlin is good. There's your analysis. McLaughlin is good.
Very good. I mean, there was,
150 yards on the ground, 108 of those after first contact.
That's crazy.
And he's not that big.
No, that's something that's probably more frustrating than I mean, it plays into missed tackle, but when a guy has, what is that? I'm bad at math. 60 whatever plus percent of his yards are
right.
after contact, 70%.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
Cody was just a killer again. He's awesome. Wagey, I thought, really bounced back because I thought he was kind of a forgotten man down in Vermillion. I think he needs to be that guy for this defensive line, and I thought he played like that guy on Saturday.
Yeah, and I mean, that DND tackle room, they're going to need him.
They need him desperately, absolutely.
Now more than ever, if Cav is out for, you know, one game or however many games, they need him and TP. They need to lean on them for, you know, for the boys to get either get home at the quarterback on big, you know, third and longs to take him down for a sack, or, you know, TFLs, whatever it is. They need the vets to step up, that's for sure.
Speaking of stepping up, something we've talked about all year long, about this wide receiver group, about, you know, Noah Pauley's room. These aren't the gospel, obviously, but, you know, 24 players got PFF grades on offense, and of the bottom seven, six were wide receivers. What can that group do to just kind of take a step? I mean, that I don't know if they're the separation is an issue, holding on to the football is an issue. I don't know, you know, and obviously, look, man, there aren't that many opportunities. This was a reasonably, you know, closely contested game, and you're looking at the box score here, and you're looking at 46 runs and 18 passes. I get it, but not, you know, necessarily always making an impact. You're of your 13 actual plays completed, you've got six of the 13 are to non-receivers. You know, over half of them are going to Hunter and Stoffel.
Yeah, and like you said, I mean, what was it, 46 rushes, and what did NC during the presser? They had 9 rushers.
Yeah,
nine different guys rushing.
Nine ball carriers. Yep, 9 ball carriers, 46 attempts, including one kneel down, so 45 attempts.
Yeah, I mean, nine people having one rush or more or whatever, 9 ball carriers, that's something you see in like a blowout win. That's
right.
Not something you see in like a 2-score ball game or whatever it was. So like obviously this team is set up to run the ball like that. So it's harder and harder to get, you know, receivers into a rhythm or whatever it is. But yeah, I think that's probably, yeah. And I'm always for the boys, so like I don't want to like
Sound bad, I know. It's a tough spot for you because you're fresh off the team. I get it.
But if there is a question mark like on the offense, I think everyone would agree that it's just someone in the receiver room to step up and be consistent. Because we see flashes from every single one of those guys.
Yeah.
But,
yep.
And like, even though like Lippy and Raja didn't make those plays, if those plays were made, those are insanely crazy plays.
Yes.
Those aren't normal plays to make.
Right, right.
So like, we see flashes from all these guys. I think it's just going to be, we're going to need at least one, definitely two, hopefully three of them to step up, you know, towards the end of the year and going into the playoffs.
Yeah, and like I you know, I was ready to, you know, name DJ Hart the next guy, and no receptions on no targets with one rush for 0 yards.
Right, it's just going to be consistency.
Yeah, I mean, you're just looking for that consistency.
Because, like, hopefully we, you know, I mean, you compared, you know, the D-end earlier to hopefully we can have him be a Tuska or a Wagey at some point. Hopefully one of these guys can make a moment and a name for themselves like Shep and RJ did.
Sure.
At some point, you know.
We know Christian Watson's not walking through that door.
Right. And they have vet guys.
Yeah.
Lippy, Mathis, Phoenix.
Yes.
And like I said with the D-tacks and DNs earlier and the O-line earlier, sound like a broken record here, but you want to lean on your vets. So, in my opinion, I think Coach Pauley and, like, Cole Jacob, former receiver for the Bison, he preaches and speaks very, very, very highly of Coach Pauley. So, I don't have any doubts that he's going to get that figured out.
Yeah, Noah's great. And I think if you did want this room in anybody's hands, it would be Coach Pauley for sure. I really think Kubitz is taking a step. I know, you know, they're probably in a situation where they want to involve Luke Wirtz on stuff that isn't just special teams. But, boy, I've been impressed with Kubitz. And the athleticism, the range, the length was never the question with him. It was the physicality. It was the tackling. And now that that is starting to kind of round the corner and maybe he's got a little bit of the taste for blood, I've really been impressed with him because if he's going to go out there, and I think, you know, we talked about the missed tackles, I think Kubitz maybe got dinged for one, and that'll happen. I mean, you're playing yeah, linebacker. That's going to happen. Yeah, he got dinged for one, but he made two – solo tackles and assisted with five, and two of them were deemed stops. He gave up one catch for negative 4 yards in coverage. Like, he that's not his issue. And if he can be an average tackler and an average run defender, all the other things that he brings to the table, I think makes him their best option at Mike, even though I think you still want to involve Wirtz in some way.
Yeah, and like, I think Wirtz and Kubits were two, when I said that, you know, this is the most confident group that I think we've seen all year as far as the team goes. Those are two of the guys that I thought of right away. I thought I just thought they looked super confident out there. They were flying around. I don't think they, you know, early in that South Dakota game when we were missing tackles, it looked like they were missing them slow or hesitant. Now, if we're missing tackles, hopefully they're missing them fast, if they are. But those are two guys that I thought played super confident on Saturday.
Allegedly, Wisniewski getting closer to play. I think I actually would just put him. I've toyed with this over and over again. I think I'd put him right back in that rotation with Kays. Kays is sometimes, you know, missed three tackles on Saturday. Hasn't. I mean, I know he's playing 100% of the snaps. Maybe lighten that load a little bit. Maybe some sort of a dime package thing where, like, him and Kopp come in and defend the pass. They're both really good pass defending linebackers. I know that is usually when Kopp is on the field is when they go to dime or like a lighter nickel. I know that that's when Logan comes in. But, man, if I were going to do something, I'd maybe get a little bit bigger on rundowns and rotate Kays and Wiz, at least to begin, because then you're not trying to teach him Mike on the fly. Then you're not taking those two guys who've been battling their asses off to not, you know, play. Just like, okay, great competition at Mike. Congrats, Kubits, you won, except now Wiz is the Mike. Goodbye. Like, I think you leave those guys there.
Yeah, especially if they're playing well still.
Yeah, absolutely.
By the time Wiz, whenever Wiz comes back and he's full go, you know, if those guys are still playing well and those are the two
and that, he knows the will position,
right, and those are the two that are playing the best, then yeah, I think the coaches would agree, like, you have to, you know, you see in every sports, like, you have to play the hot hand.
Yeah, I would lighten Kays's at this point. I think I would lighten Kays's load and play Wiz on will potentially, you know, more on early down stuff in the run, although Wiz is, and then maybe Wiz helps with the, not that you necessarily have to put his hand in the dirt, but maybe Wiz helps with the depth on the D-line. He certainly has the length and the bend to rush the passer. Have him stand-up rush on third down. They've gone to that 3-3 before on third and long. There's no reason he can't be a part of that.
Yeah, and yeah, I think it's called like the Oki package. I think I would not be surprised if we see more of that going forward, especially sure, with all the injuries to the D-linemen in general. But yeah, I mean, hoping Wiz comes back.
If the backers start getting healthier, you got, I mean, they're absolutely in a situation where you're way deeper at linebacker.
Yeah.
Because you do trust Julian. You do trust Oscar. You trust both Mikes. You trust Kopp. You trust Kayser. And you trust Wiz. I am going to start taking D linemen off the field and putting linebackers on the field if it makes sense.
Right.
If it makes sense. For sure. Okay. Yeah. Shout out to Dutnever and Mostard. I thought they were both excellent. I mentioned that I had a really, really high opinion of Youngstown's center. He was the first team center on my all-MVFC team last year, and Duttenheffer hit him with a sick move and went and got the QB. That was a really cool moment for him in front of that Fargo Dome crowd, and they're a big deal. Quinn, before we get out of here, what do you think the guys outside of the tackling circuit that you have mentioned on a number of occasions, what do you think the guys are working on in practice this week?
Honestly, I think it's a lot of fundamental stuff. I mean, I don't know much about Indiana State, but I know Terry Hout. Is that how you pronounce it?
Terry Hout.
I know that's a difficult place to play. It's one
bring
of those,
your own energy.
Yeah, it's
one, Coach Entz was that, very kind about the reality of that situation.
Yeah, and I think that's what it'll be. It'll just... Because I think, you know, watching film or rewatching the game, whatever you want to say, I think everyone could see that this is probably the fastest that we've played, you know, the most confident that they've been. I think he just wants to make sure that that continues.
Sure.
That there isn't a first half USD again.
Sure.
Which, you know, has happened down there before. I mean, I think I was part of a team that, you know, played a close first half and then kind of woke up in the second. But at this point of the year, six games in, you know, bye week is still a few weeks away, so we're not looking at that. But, you know, he wants to make sure that this thing keeps rolling. And, yeah, I think it's just going to be a lot of fundamental stuff and just making sure guys are, you know, like you said, ready to bring their own energy.
All right, Quinn, we appreciate your time here on a Monday. We appreciate our sponsors, Tundra Insurance and Gateway Chevrolet. And we appreciate all you fine folks for listening. Have a phenomenal rest of your week and go Bison.